Christians who know there's going to be a pastoral transition coming down the road. And so I was meeting with this one particular church board that I will not tell you where it's located, except I live there now. So you have to guess where I live. But anyway, walked into that church board meeting, and Ken Balch was with me in that particular meeting, and the pastor turned it over to Ken and myself. And my name's Ken, too, so we're both Kens. That way people don't get too confused. But at any rate, we said, well, you know why we're here, because the pastor's going to leave. And I saw two ladies on the board go, well, he hadn't told me there were two brand new persons on the church board that he had not informed that he was leaving. And so that was kind of a shock to them. And the reality is that the pastor is going to the mission field. And so therefore, we were kind of waiting on timing and all that. But these two ladies, I felt bad for them because it was a shocker. They had no idea their pastor was thinking of leaving. And but anyway, he is leaving. And in fact, he's leaving this summer. So anyway, you know Pastor Grosvenor is retiring. January, officially. And I think that marks his 30th year here as pastor of New Cumberland, Pennsylvania. And that's a remarkable tenure. It really is. And so what we've been doing is trying to work with churches and congregations, church boards in particular, and begin the process a little bit up front rather than wait till a pastor actually walks out the door and then come running in and trying to do a pastoral transition. So that's the purpose of my being here today. And actually, it just worked out that when I met with the board the last time, I said, I'd like to talk to the congregation, and the first Sunday I have available is June 14th. And they said, that's fine. But then I thought, I better check with Pastor Steve. And Pastor Steve, unbeknownst to me, and I think David Earp helped me with this. And by the way, Cindy did push you. I heard that somewhere else. Okay. Okay. Oh, that's what it was. Okay. She wanted to, but she didn't. So it turned out that Pastor Steve had already been looking for someone to fill the pulpit today because he was planning to go to North Carolina on this vacation. So the bottom line is, or South Carolina, which is it? North. And so when I let him know that I'd like to come today, if that's possible, and he said, quite all right. And I said, do you trust me? I'm not going to tell you his response, okay? Let me start with a couple of passages of Scripture. They're both in the Old Testament. And while I'm not preaching, I do want to put this in some kind of biblical context for us. And so the best transition that I can point to and say, let's look at a transition in leadership in the Scriptures. What's the one that I would go to immediately, and that's Moses and Joshua. And so if you'd go with me to two passages, and the first one's in Numbers, and the second one is actually in Joshua chapter 1, but Numbers chapter 27. I know they're both in the Old Testament, but that's where Moses and Joshua lived. We're in the Old Testament, so that's why we're going to look at them. But these two are connected, these two passages, but I want you to hear some of the things that were going on, and we'll connect to that a little bit later. So in Numbers chapter 27, verse 12, this is when, and actually 12, 13, and 14, Moses is having a conversation the Lord is having a conversation with Moses. Verse 15 is where I want to pick it up. Moses said to the Lord, may the Lord, the God of the spirits of all mankind, appoint a man over this community to go out and come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom the Spirit is, and lay your hand on him. Have him stand before Eleazar the priest and the entire assembly and commission him in their presence. Give him some of your authority, so the whole Israelite community will obey him. He is to stand before Eleazar the priest, who will obtain decisions for him by inquiring of the Urim before the Lord. At his command, he and the entire community of the Israelites will go out, and at his command, they will come in. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua, had him stand before Eleazar the priest, the whole assembly, and then he laid his hands on him, commissioned him as the Lord instructed through Moses. Now, this all came as a result of the Lord saying to Moses, "You're finished." Well, he didn't exactly say that, but he sort of said that. He had a conversation with Moses, actually up on the mountain, and it's kind of a unique moment because there had been, in Moses' case, some disobedience when he was instructed to do one thing and he did something else instead, because he tried to do what they did before, and the Lord had given him something new to do, and he didn't follow through on that. So the conversation between God and Moses was this: there's the promised land. Now, I had the privilege of standing on that mountain. I have to tell you that it was a marvelous experience for me, standing on that mountain, looking down across into the Jordan Valley, the Jordan River, dirty, and across the plain and into the promised land. And they don't know exactly where Moses is buried on this mountain, but it says, the scripture says, that God buried him himself. Now, I don't know of anybody else other than being swallowed up by the earth where God specifically buried a person. But in this case, God did. And he said, "You're not going to go into that promised land. You can see it, but you can't go in it." And that's when he asked to have Joshua come and be the representative. Now, if I can take you to Joshua chapter 1, and as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, and all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you." Love that passage. I will never, I didn't read that. I just said that. You understand. "I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right, to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you." So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, "Go throughout the camp, tell the people, get your supplies ready. 3 days from now, you'll cross the Jordan. Here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving you for your own." That's a great story. It's an interesting story in the sense that the history is that 39 years and some months ago, they had faced the Jordan River once before. And the story, and you know the story, but I can't presume that anymore. I've discovered that in the day in which we live, I can't presume that people know all the Bible stories. But there were 12 spies sent into the Promised Land 39 plus years ago from this moment. And one from each of the tribes, each of the 12 tribes. And they went in and saw the land, and they came back to give their report. And their report was a really positive report. Grapes, like you wouldn't believe. And I like grapes, so I really paid attention to that one. All kinds of great fruit. Now, I'm not a super fruit eater, but I love grapes. And they just went on and on about the plentiful abundance of the land, this promised land. It's gorgeous. It's nice. Now, I have to tell you the truth. This is just my being honest with you. When I was visiting the Holy Land for the very first time, I had a picture in my mind. And the picture I have in my mind, which we tend to do, is that the promised land is dry, dusty, rocky, yucky. I mean, that's what I had in my mind, okay? Because pictures of Israel are exactly that. And by the way, I was in Israel, Jerusalem I'm talking about. And Jerusalem is dry, rocky, dusty, da-da. But we crossed across Jordan River up further north, went over by the Sea of Galilee. It is gorgeous, beautiful country. So I know why Jesus spent most of his ministry around the Sea of Galilee now, not in Jerusalem. But it's beautiful up there. At first, when I said, this is the promised land, right. No, Sea of Galilee, I understand it. And up by Nazareth, it's gorgeous. At any rate, that's aside. Michelle, I'm not going till 1 o'clock. So the 12 spies came back with their incredible report, and 10 of them said, it is a great place, but there are giants in that land. And there were. And we cannot. We're small of stature. We are about the size of Ken Mills. We're small of stature. And we can't take those giants. But now it's interesting. Joshua and Caleb came forth with their report. And they said, it is gorgeous. And it is a great place. And if God told us to do it, we can do it. It's not an issue of whether we can. It's an issue of whether he can in us and through us. And that what's really disconcerting about this Bible story for me is that the majority wins. And that's the way we run our government and our churches. And I don't know that that's always good. And I really liked when we sang the song, All We Need Is You, and Open My Eyes, because really what we want in this whole transition is God's will. We want God's person. We want God's way. We want it to be of God totally, not of man. Now, he entrusts us with a process, but I have to stop here long enough to say that we need to be people of prayer through this entire transition and somehow just keep going back to him and back to him and back to him, saying, is this what you want, God? Is this your direction? Is this what you're trying to say to us? And so, anyway, the Lord said, since you disobeyed, and he said this to the nation of Israel, since you disobeyed me 39 and a half years ago, none of you will see the promised land, not one of you, except Joshua and Caleb and their families. And now, almost 40 years later, God comes to Joshua and says, Moses is dead, you're the man. And I want you to go into the promised land. That's where I want you to go with this nation. And they did. It's a powerful moment. Now, there are several things in here in this passage that I resonate with personally. But let me just highlight a couple, and then we'll move on. Be careful to obey. Be careful to obey. In other words, what we're seeking is the Lord's will, the Lord's direction. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. And so biblical principles for us is huge in this transition. Be strong and courageous. Now, churches get really nervous in pastoral transitions, I've discovered. I've been doing this way too long. I think I'm finishing up my 23rd year as a district superintendent. And I don't get uptight at all anymore in pastoral transitions, except when I'm ticked off at the pastor for leaving. Other than that, I don't get uptight, okay? Because I've been through it so many times, and I've seen how God works mysteriously at times in so many different ways that when I walk into a transition, I'm going, it's God. It's got to be God. It's God. It's God. It's God. It's God. But I realized that that's who I am, and that is not who everybody is. And 30 years since you've had a pastor transition in this church. 30 years. So how many of you were here when Pastor Steve came as the pastor of the church? Not the majority, thank you. Not the majority by far. So some of you may not have gone through a pastoral transition at all. Some of you may have gone through a pastoral transition in another church or another congregation. But let me just assure you that God is with you. He is not going to forsake you in this transition process. He is with us. He has promised us, he says, be strong and courageous, okay? Be careful to obey. And don't be terrified. Don't be discouraged. It's the Lord's church. And I need to tell you that. It's not our church anyway. It's his church. It's not the church of the Nazarene's church. It's not Ken Mills' church. It's the Lord's church. This is his community. And so I trust him a lot more than I trust me. And you ought to, too. Excuse me. But it does say, get ready. It does say that here. Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell them, get your supplies ready. 3 days from now, we're going to cross the Jordan. And so getting ready is important for us. And part of this whole getting ready piece is understanding that God is in charge, God is in control, and we can trust his leadership as we move forward into the days that God has called us to. I'm going to switch from Bible to iPad, forgive me, because what I want to walk you through this morning, just for your information, is process. And that's why I say I'm not really preaching. I'm really here just kind of sharing. God is in control. God is in charge. It's his church, and I've said that. And by the way, God never gets confused. He always gets it right. He does. Now, I have to be honest enough to tell you that sometimes in my life, I think he missed it. But then I find out he had it right all the time. You know, it was me that missed it. And so I'm just here to tell you that God has it right. And so focusing and keeping our eyes on Jesus Christ and on him and his process really, really does help. So I think I've said enough of that already, right? Our responsibility is to get ready, to listen, to obey, stay in the Word, be strong and courageous. I ran across a statement a few years ago that I absolutely love, and I can never quote it word for word. In fact, I'm terrible at quoting anything, even Scripture. And I was never a Bible quizzer growing up, and I really commend Bible quizzers for being able to get their words in the right order. I can quote a passage, but I mix up the words. Or I write my own. Even songs, when I sing, I make up my own words. I hope that's okay, Jason. My wife says, that's not the words. Those aren't the words of that song. I said, they are now. Because they made sense to me, you know. But Aaron McManus, the pastor on the West Coast, shared this. I just love this thought. God is continuously calling us or inviting us to believe in that his future is better than any past that we've experienced with him. Now, let me read that again. God is continuously inviting us to believe that his future is better than any past that we've ever experienced with him. Do you understand what he's saying? The future, based on God's direction, is always better than any past we've ever known. And so I'm looking forward to what God has in mind. I'm looking forward to the next chapter in the New Cumberland story. I'm looking forward to the new chapter in Pastor Steve's life, because God is still working in his life too. So anyway, here's the starting place, prayer. And I hope that through your, as we did this morning, as we pray for this transition process, pray for the church board, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but pray for the transition process. When you have Bible studies, when you have cell groups, small groups, or however you folks meet, could you just pause to pray when you pray that God would direct us as a congregation, as a church? And I meet with the church board on a fairly regular basis, and we're going to probably be stepping it up here because now we're into June, and January comes in about 6 or 7 months. Do you realize that Christmas is only a little over 6 months away? In case you haven't done your shopping yet, I thought maybe this would be a good time to start. Don't know why I thought that this morning, but I actually thought about that early this morning. This is not a fast process. And even though we've started earlier than what we normally would, the whole transition process is not a fast process. We don't walk in with some resumes and set them down on the table and go, and we call the person and they say yes and they're here. It doesn't work quite that way. We want to bring people along. We want to walk through the process with the board and also with the congregation. So it's not fast. Pastor Steve told me that his goal, and I understand this, that his goal was the day he walks out of New Cumberland as the pastor, that the new pastor would be walking in. Now, I don't know if that's going to be possible, to be honest with you. And psychologically, I'm not 100% sure that's exactly the way we're going to do it. But it'll be close, Lord willing, and the creek doesn't rise, and so forth. So in a few moments, I'm going to stop talking. It's hard to believe, but in a few moments, I really am going to stop talking and have you fill out that survey that's in your hand. Because what we've been working on with the church board over the past few months is different pieces of our profile. In other words, what we're trying to do is put together a profile of what does the New Cumberland congregation look like? You know, because as soon as I call or email a candidate and say to them, are you interested in allowing your name to be considered as a pastor at New Cumberland, Pennsylvania, the first question they're going to ask me is, well, tell me something about the church, because I know nothing about New Cumberland, for the most part. And so what they want to see is, who are they? And so we've been working on that as a board, some pieces. We've done a SWOT analysis. We've done some other things. So we're getting a fairly good, concise, I think, picture. But you're the piece of this that's going to help round it out for us. And on the first page, it says, we begin the process of seeking. We want you to tell us the three greatest strengths of the church. So we want you to take under number one, we want you to put a number one, a number two, and a number three. Based on your opinion, what is the greatest strength of this congregation right now? Not what it has been in the past, what it is right now. Is it Bible believing? Is it the variety of ministries? Is it prayer? So we want you to put number one, number two, number three in order of your priority. The second question has to do with the greatest needs. What do you see the greatest needs of our congregation are right now? Whether it's a conflict resolution or a call of young people to ministry or whatever. You get to choose and write one, two, and three again. Now, on the back page, it gets a little more difficult, but it's not horrendous, honest. And all we want you to do is top five skills or abilities that you're looking for in a pastor. From your perspective, okay, we've been talking to the board a little bit about this, but we want to know your perspective, and it's okay if board members also fill one of these out. Skills in the pulpit, is that the most important thing for you? The ability to set the direction, to cast a vision, is that the most important? So we want you to give us your top five priorities, number one, two, three, four, and five. And then in case we didn't say something we should have, in number four, you just get to tell us how crazy we are or whatever. But number four, you can write down any other things we ought to consider. And then in the block where the church is, this is your opportunity to recommend a person that we ought to think about or consider as a candidate for pastor here. Now, some of you would say, well, I don't really know anybody, but I've kind of surprised sometimes by the networks and by the names we get. We just concluded a search in Salisbury, Maryland, that had started last November, and we just concluded it this past month. And the name of the new pastor came through our congregational survey. And I would never have thought about this person because I didn't know him. And so I made contact with him, had a great telephone conversation with him, and it turned out I didn't know if he was the right one or not, but as it all boiled down, he kept coming to the top. And so he ended up to be the pastor. And so it came because a congregational member said, "What about this person?" And so we considered him. You don't have to put your name on it. You may if you want to. You don't have to. But we would like to ask you your age range and so forth. So is that as clear as mud? So why don't you just take a couple of minutes and just fill that out? And some people have asked me, can I take this home and fill it out and bring it back? And I say no. And the reason I say no is because you won't bring it back. Because I know how we operate. We put it in our Bible, we go home, we forget about it, and next, oh yeah, I was going to do that. So would you just take a couple of minutes now to fill it out? Told you I wasn't preaching. Just fill it out right now, and then I'll share some other things with you. Sunday morning, and I was giving instructions, and they started filling out and got real quiet. They were working, and so I thought, I still have a lot of stuff to say, so I'm going to start talking, and so I did, and this one lady raised her hand. She said, "Could you be quiet until I finish?" I got it. One of the things that we try to do is communicate with the congregation as much as possible. I'm not sure we're always successful at that, but that's one of our goals. And we do have a person. I'm thinking, is it Randy? Who's supposed to give a report from the board every time we meet? Oh, it's you. Okay, my apologies. I couldn't remember. So that every time I meet with a church board, he's going to give some kind of oral report about what we talked about. And that's important to us because we want you to be as involved in the process as you possibly can be as a congregation. And so that it's not a board that's doing secret things behind closed doors. So that's kind of important to us. So we'll try to keep you as informed as possible. And sometimes, I will be honest with you, it may be a little on the nebulous side. What I mean by that is we're not going to talk about names publicly because the Nazarene grapevine works really well. Really well. And so if I was to say... if I was to say a name out loud and say, this is one of the persons we're thinking of considering, before I got home, I would have text messages and telephone calls. Seriously. And so the last people, that's not quite true. The last minute, you'll know who it is, but the board has to be quiet about the names. They can talk about the process. So if you go to a church board member and say, tell me who they're considering, the board member is authorized to say to you, none of your business, or something like that, in a very nice way, you know. I can't tell you. And do you understand that? Because, seriously, I've had calls from other states saying, I hear so-and-so is going to go to this church in your district. And I'm going, what? we hadn't even got that far yet. But anyway, so... there are some things we have to keep quiet. All right. What will happen now is we will complete the profile. In fact, I think we meet with the board again a week from Tuesday night. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yeah, thought it was coming up. And so one of our work pieces will be to wrap up this profile because we've got most of their information, and now we're going to take your information and try to put it together with it. And then also, they gave me a couple of names, and I have a couple of names already in my quiver that I would like the board to think about. And then we'll take the ones that you have given me today, and we'll start looking at names. And asking those persons if they would be willing to be considered as a candidate for this congregation, and request a resume from them. And then the church board will kind of walk with me through those resumes. And by the way, the church board members will have copies of those resumes. Don't ask for them, but they'll have copies of them because that becomes their prayer sheet, so that they pray through those resumes. So it's not a, here's a name and I have to leave the paper here and go home and pray about this. No, I've got the resume that I can pray with and so forth. And so we'll be praying over some resumes for the next few months. And we'll try to boil that down. And what we try to do is take the profile that you're helping us with today, along with what the board has done, and the resumes, and see how they match. In other words, if you feel like Bible skills in the pulpit is one of the most important priorities, and this person says, well, I'm not really good at preaching, but I'm really good at counseling, well, that may not be the right match. And it's not that we're trying to be too scientific here as much as we're trying to say, but this is the skill that they're looking for, and does this person match that to the best of our ability? So we're trying to do our homework to the best of our abilities, et cetera. Does that make sense? And then what we'll do is boil that down to a short list and of names. And our goal is to come out with maybe about two or three names that we are thinking pretty positive about. Looking at prioritizing those names, so we have a number one on our list, and we have a number two, number three. And the board would then give an invitation to priority number one person to come and meet with us as a board, and we would interview that person. Now, I've had people ask if they can attend an interview, and we make that an executive session, so only the board members are allowed to attend that interview. Because we've also ran into a couple of situations where the congregation wanted a candidate, but the board in interviewing going, uh-oh, this doesn't work. And so then how do you explain to a congregation why that person wouldn't work? So anyway, try to keep that focused. So we interview that person. If that interview is an exceptionally good interview and we feel very strong about that candidate, if that's the case, then we'll move to the next step, and I'll explain that in a minute. If that interview is not satisfactory for us and we're saying, it's good person, but I'm not sure it fits, then we'll go to number two or number three or number four or whatever. So we'll interview as many as it takes to find the person that we feel like God is directing us to. Now, when we find that person, based on the board's understanding, the next step is really to present to you some opportunity to meet that person. So then you will know the name. And by that time, so will the church that they're coming from. In other words, we will set up some kind of opportunity, whether it's a fellowship dinner, whether it's a church service, whether it's a question and answer time. We'll have some kind of opportunity where you can meet and greet, connect with, hear, listen to, see, touch. I was going to say feel, but let's don't go there. Just touch, like shake their hand. In other words, we don't want you to vote on a pastoral candidate that you have not seen or had read about. And we will share with you their resume at that point so that you will have the same copy that we used as a church board for the most part. Now, that's kind of important to us as well because we want the congregation involved in this whole process. So from there, we move to a congregational vote. And the congregational vote will occur after two announcements, and usually it's Sunday morning now. The manual says two services, but most churches only have a Sunday morning service now. So we'll do probably two sessions, Sunday morning and a Sunday morning, and say on such and such a date we're going to have a congregational meeting, and we'll vote for the pastor. And what we have been doing a lot, and I think I talked to the board about it, if I didn't go, what are you talking about? We would like for both members and non-members to vote. In other words, if you're not a member of this church, we'd like you to voice your opinion as well. If you are a member, we want you to voice your opinion. There'll be two different color ballots because I am requested or required by law, to have a legal vote. And the member vote has to be two-thirds majority of the congregation in order to call a pastor. So some non-members say, well, our vote doesn't count. Well, you know what? It's more and more it is counting. In other words, candidates are asking me, so what was the total vote, member and non-member? What was all of that? Because they want to know if they can connect to everybody. And so, anyway. And after that, and that person has 15 days to accept or reject, providing we get a two-thirds majority. And then we work out the arrangements of when they would arrive. And after they would arrive, we have been planning what we call installation services, which are more like commissioning moments for a congregation. And it gives us a chance to install them officially as pastor and pray over them at the altar and so forth. Now, at this point in time, I would say something like, so do you have any questions? But I'm not going to say that today because we have donuts and coffee planned. Is that right? Yeah. So, Michelle, do you want to come and tell us what we're supposed to do? You tell me what to do so you can tell them what to do. Okay.
All right, Ken, I'll tell you what we're going to do.
Thank you.
Ken and Patty are not leaving us. We have asked them to stay through the Sunday school hour, and so we are inviting all of you. All Sunday school classes are pretty much going to stay here, including teens. I know some of you may teach younger ones. If you want to bring them in, that's fine. But we're encouraging you to stay, ask questions. Like Ken said, this is... Yes, the church board is heavily involved in this, but so are you. This is as important for us as a board to involve you. And so this is your opportunity to grill Ken. I mean, ask Ken a lot of questions.
That's right.
And, if there's anything he can't answer, we will get you an answer. And Mike or myself can come back and report those answers to you. So at this time, there's coffee, water, beverages out back, and a couple of pastries, and right after Jason plays his last song for us, we're going to break for that.
That's correct.
And then go ahead, Jason.
Because this is mission,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and then so after Jason's song, we'll break, and then we'll meet back in here at 11 o'clock to start the question and answer session.